This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline with Texas Scorecard. I'm Brandon Waltons, Managing Editor, joined, of course, by the enforcer, Michael Quinn Sullivan.
You say, of course, like I bullied my way in. That hurts my feeling.
We're going to talk about a few of the big stories. Going to sit down, actually, with Aaron Anderson up in the Metroplex to talk about a big issue that's on a lot of people's minds, which is election integrity in the wake of this election and the upcoming legislative session. But first, Michael, I knew I had to talk to you. Governor Greg Abbott opening the door, keeping the door open on a possible presidential run in 2024.
Yeah, you know, we've been seeing and hearing the hints of this for, you know, it's literally the worst kept secret in Austin. Mm-hmm. Of all the secrets in the sewer-like culture of Austin, this is the worst kept. That Greg Abbott now really, really, really wants to be president. And it appears that, you know, his team has taken the tact that the way Greg Abbott becomes president of the United States is by challenging Joe Biden in 2024. And you've seen bits and pieces of that with Abbott's lead political consultant, Dave Carney, a New Hampshire political consultant, going out and being very dismissive about Donald Trump throughout the summer. Karl Rove, another one of Greg Abbott's advisors, also being pretty dismissive of President Trump. And now, over the past, week, has been only a week since the election.
It seems like 9 years.
But it feels like Abbott has really said very little about fraud, about the problems. Unlike some others, he has been almost dead silent on those questions. Again, all kind of pointing to Greg Abbott wondering for president in 2024. And then you had him on the Mark Davis show, where Mark Davis just kind of did the, I guess it's 6:60 a.m. in Dallas,
yes,
did the kind of unpleasant thing and said, "So, Governor, are you running for president?" And you had a great write-up about it, Brandon, and his answer was, we'll take it one day at a time, which means, oh, absolutely, you should see the T-shirts. They look really nice.
Yeah, this isn't a new thing. Maybe some people are surprised to hear this, but, the Texas governor spot, you look at George Bush, you look at Rick Perry's runs, has been somewhat of a launching post for a presidential campaign.
Well, look, even going back further, a lot of folks thought that Ann Richards was going to be a competitor for the presidency after her, George H.W. Bush being born with a silver spoon in his mouth speech at the Democratic convention. And of course, then she lost to George W. Bush for governor. There's been a pretty long history of, at least in the modern era, of Texas governors, if not actually running, kind of feeling like, well, hey, I've got a big cowboy hat, I'm going to go run for president. So it shouldn't surprise us too much, to your point.
Well, while Governor Abbott is keeping his doors and possibilities open for 2024, even he admitted his mind is on 2022. That is when he is going to be up for re-election. Governor Abbott has already indicated that he is running for a third term. You think that's going to be a challenge for him?
Well, look, voters, I think you can look at America, you can look at Texas, voters, taxpayers, citizens, all tend to be pretty forgiving of folks having maybe not performed up to task previously, but when they start performing, people tend to be forgiving of the past. And right now, the governor has kind of a lackluster record to be running on, going into what we would, he would be selling as a third term as governor. He hasn't delivered on a lot of the reforms that he campaigned initially on, certainly hasn't worked towards any of the Republican Party of Texas priorities, the grassroots priorities like the Lone Star Agenda, and now heading into this, so this next session is really make or break in a lot of ways for how easy 2022 would be for Governor Abbott, and he's kind of kicking it off with, you know, a whimper by rather than going out with some bold reforms. Instead, he's endorsing Dade Phelan's speakership, you know, 2 months before it, you know, before there's even a vote. And I think that kind of signals, you know, Dade Phelan, who's not been a huge champion, you know, no matter what you might think of him, he certainly has not been a champion of conservative grassroots or Republican Party priorities. And so I think that Abbott might be signaling, hey, if you've liked what I've done so far, you're in for a treat, you know, kind of thing, which isn't exactly what he should be doing ahead of 2022.
Well, that's a great transition because I talked last week a little bit about Dade Phelan's rise to become the you know, some would say the presumptive speaker or certainly the front runner at this moment. And yes, you had Governor Greg Abbott out there congratulating him, even though the vote hasn't taken place, the Republican caucus vote hasn't even taken place to nominate him. But you had a different Republican, I guess you could call him a statewide, that is Republican Party of Texas Chairman Alan West, who came out earlier this week, guns a-blazing, really, with some strong words about picking Dade Phelan as speaker. Say, I'm just going to read a line here. I mean, he says, the Republican Party of Texas will not support nor accept State Representative Dade Phelan as Speaker of the Texas House. Texas does not need a Republican political traitor, not at a time when the two diverging philosophies of governance are
political traitor.
A political traitor, strong words, and something that he received a lot of pushback for from, you know, lawmakers, lobbyists, liberals. But you actually saw a lot of grassroots people really come to his defense. Actually, I thought it was funny that not only do you have Governor Abbott out there supporting Dade Phelan, but you also, they sicked outgoing, disgraced Speaker Dennis Bonin out there to be to lead the moral charge against what a good Republican is, and he's out there attacking Alan West.
But let's be clear, though. I can kind of excuse Dennis Bonin because Dade Phelan is actually his employer in the real world. Dade Phelan and his family bought Dennis Bonin's bank from Dennis Bonin and then gave Dennis Bonin a job in the bank. And so, of course, I mean, I would hope, Brandon, that you would go out and defend me, you know. I think that it's very interesting. I think that's something that probably needs to be explored a little bit more is this whole, you know, Dade Phelan bails out Dennis Bonin. Dennis Bonin's, you know, about, you know, the entire culture of the Austin Capitol is so cronyistic and really surprising. But which is what makes Alan West and his comments just so amazing is all of these cats in Austin think that everyone in Austin is supposed to exist to, you know, scratch each other's backs and watch each other's backs and cover up for each other's, you know, little oopsies or whatever. And here you've got Alan West out, you know, just, you know, tearing them apart. And in large part doing, I mean, he's actually doing what he campaigned he would do. He would represent the conservative grassroots. He'd represent the Republican Party. And, you know, look, whatever else you might think of him, you got to give the guy credit for doing what he said he was going to do.
Yes, shouldn't come as a surprise. Although sometimes people, actually a lot of times in politics, people doing what they said they were going to do, unfortunately, is a surprise.
That is a surprise, yeah.
Yeah. So one of those, speaking of the Republican Party of Texas, top legislative priority going into this next session is election integrity. That's been heightened due to issues not just here in Texas, but across the nation. You see it all over TV. I sat down with Aaron Anderson in the Metroplex earlier today to discuss issues happening in Texas and what we can look forward to in the next legislative session. With all eyes on election integrity and voter fraud issues in other states like Pennsylvania, Nevada, so on and so forth, many people don't realize that this cycle here in Texas, we had a lot of issues of our own. Aaron Anderson joining me now to talk about that. Aaron, this was a really, really wild and trying cycle when it comes to election integrity, even in Texas.
Well, that's right, Brandon. Obviously, responding to the coronavirus concerns, we ended up throwing a lot of our usual procedures out the window, which is not something we want to do. From our governor making up new expansions of early voting, down to local officials like Harris County Clerk Chris Hollins making up drive-through voting, a brand new way to vote that is not in our election code. So what we want to look at in the upcoming legislative session is to make sure processes we have are solid and that we address some of these things that came up on the fly with people responding to these emergency situations and to a bunch of lawsuits filed by the Democrat Party to try to overturn our laws in the courts, which is not where we want to be creating election law.
Yeah, and people might remember, I mean, you go back to earlier this year when you had the Democrats fighting to expand mail-in balloting to anybody who basically wanted one. They said, oh, a fear of the coronavirus constitutes a disability. Courts didn't uphold that one, but I think there was enough confusion that you probably had a big increase in people who probably weren't properly authorized, I guess, to vote by mail. But you mentioned this drive-through voting issue in Harris County. This is something that the legislature specifically does not authorize, and yet they went ahead and did it. And we talked about this earlier. It doesn't even look like it necessarily helped all that much.
Well, that's right, Brandon. We had reports from people on the ground, and I've got an article up from a Harris County election judge, Felicia Cravens, who gave a lot of great observations on the ground of how people were reacting to some of the new rules and what it means for us going forward, how we want to tighten those up. But drive-through voting, again, part of that was based on fear of the coronavirus and keeping a distance. But what we heard is that a lot of people that were just driving up to a regular polling location were just waved on over to come into the drive-through line instead, so that a lot of that volume that they did have in drive-through voting, those voters were already going to vote anyway. It didn't create new voting opportunities, just a different variety of voting. And some people really just kind of liked the novelty of it, just like with the 24-hour voting that they decided to do in Harris County, which had very little turnout other than a party they had with a band to draw people out. So it didn't really increase the numbers all that much. And we're not sure it really increased the safety and security of the process. There's questions whether drive-through voting is safer even in these coronavirus times. But the big point being, the takeaway is that the legislature needs to be making these rules. We don't need to be having our election laws overturned in the courts, by Democrat litigants or on the ground, on the fly, by local election officials who reportedly were kind of changing the rules throughout the early voting process as well.
And that's what was interesting to read. You mentioned that article. We'll drop that down in the links here, talking about exactly what these people were going through. And literally, she explains that at just about every day there was a new directive. Sometimes these directives, only things that people working the polls could actually see. We have a very specific set of processes for a good reason to keep our elections secure. And, I think the biggest issue, as you mentioned, that we saw is just you have courts coming in and changing them on the fly. It's tough to say what it did in Texas this cycle, but no doubt, I think those issues, and we've seen all those lawsuits, as well as the stuff happening on the national stage right now, is bringing the issue of election integrity to the front of a lot of people's minds. It's a top priority of the Republican Party of Texas. What do you expect that you could kind of look for as the legislature starts up again in January?
Well, you make up a great point that election integrity was on Texans' minds before this presidential election unfolded and showed even more areas of concern. But we always have the same areas that we're looking at when we're looking at keeping our elections. We want it to be secure, accurate, and transparent. And so we're looking at, from the voter registration process, keeping our voter rolls clean and accurate. We're going to see some legislation filed on that, and we already have some of that filed. We're going to see talking about the in-person voting process. What exactly does curbside voting mean? Does it mean you can drive up in your car through a tent? How do we keep that process secure when people are wheeling around baskets full of ballots from the parking lot into the building? The mail ballot process, which has been a continual issue, we've tightened up some of that. We want a better security. We're going to be, again, dealing with some of these lawsuits that we talked about. They didn't go away. Some of them are just put on hold. So we'll need to be following up really in the legislature rather than letting the courts dictate our rules, whether it's with verifying the signatures on our mail ballots, whether we're going to want to add another ID component, whether they're going to talk about using the disability checkbox on the mail ballot applications. That's where we've seen a lot of the voter fraud going on with the ballot harvesters, you know, unlawfully checking that box for voters. And the counting process is always an issue too. And we've seen yet again, sort of a lack of transparency as people who want to be watching the process have to argue their way in or get tossed out or what have you. So we're going to see up and down lessons from this election, as we always do, be talked about in the legislative session, how we can tighten up these rules and procedures and make our elections more secure and accurate so people can have confidence in the results. And that's what we want. We want people to go away from the election, you know, whether your candidate won or lost, you want to feel confident that it was well run, secure, and that the results are accurate.
Absolutely. One last thing. We saw a little bit of this at the whole timeline is kind of running together in my head, but it was relatively recently a court ruling that Texas had to implement a very limited form of online voter registration. Is that something you think is going away, or what's the future of online voter registration?
I don't think that's going away. Many states, I think over 30 states already have it. Clearly some states have found a way to securely implement it on some basis. It's tied to the national, you know, motor voter law, and that's how this court case came about. If, again, rather than letting the court dictate some rules for doing it, the better approach is for our legislature to come in with a solid, secure process that has more safeguards involved, that we are allowing only eligible people to get on the rolls, and a safe, secure online system, which, again, some other states have managed to do. This is going to require coordination between our Secretary of State's office and Texas DPS, who keeps, you know, that license data. And that's always been part of the problem, getting that coordination and getting what we feel is a secure system and tied into list maintenance, which is what it happens at the national level as well. You want as many people as possible to register, but you want only eligible people to be on those rolls at any time.
Absolutely. We'll be watching for that. Bill filing, pre-filing started this week. That's going to continue through February, March. And so now is the time to start contacting the lawmakers about any sort of legislation you wish to see filed in this upcoming legislative session. Thank you so much for joining, Aaron.
Thank you, Brandon.
And we're going to be following that issue really, really closely all session long at TexasScorecard.com. Actually got the chance earlier this week with you, Michael, as well, to talk to a lot of people who are concerned about election integrity. We went and visited the True Texas Project chapters up in the Metroplex.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Now, True Texas Project, of course, started at the beginning of the Tea Party wave as the Tea Party under the leadership of the party, with the able assist from her husband Fred, a number of other great committed patriots, and they've continued to grow that organization. They changed the name a couple of years ago, kind of reflecting that they really weren't a tea party anymore, and they have just really done some amazing work. And I think a lot of grassroots groups could really stand to spend a little bit of time looking at what True Texas Project has been doing these past couple of years, only starting chapters and all kind of growing where they touch, you know. But also some of the things they do inside their meetings, not only do they have kind of the normal meeting with speakers, you know, like us, you know, but they have dinner clubs, they have social gatherings, they have a football league, for goodness sakes, you know, where you know, they go out and play football on the weekends and stuff. All about building community. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would be, I would truly urge folks, look at, I know that they're also looking at expanding. Yeah. They've been currently, it's Dallas, Denton, and Tarrant counties where they have their meetings. There was a great write-up about it in the current print edition of the Texas Scorecard, and you You can find a write-up about True Texas Project at texasscorecard.com. But they're also, they've been talking about some stuff up in Lubbock, some things in Collin County, some things in Central Texas, down in the Houston area. You know, with a lot of interest there. And so I wish Julie McCarty and Fran Rhodes, who is now the president of the organization, all the best in that work. Because, again, a fabulous group of patriots.
Absolutely. And it's so important now, you know, especially, I think, to try to get off as much as you can social media and actually go and go to those groups and actually go engage with the community.
Do real things.
One, it's important to do real things, and two, it's just, it's fun, you know? So really appreciate, again, thank you to everybody at True Texas Project for having us out there earlier this week. And a big thank you to everybody watching right now. We've got Steph in Deer Park, Charles watching from Houston, Stacy in Reeves County, Cheryl Morris, a friend of Ross Kessig, there watching. Thank you for joining us this morning, everybody. And if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to leave them in the chat. I'll try to get to some of those questions after the program. For right now, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.